I like my empty life, but dang. By Wild Hack. Read by X-Man Hater. Summary. A vampire and a really good baker are chained to a ballroom wall, and they're totally going to die tomorrow. It's a dumb thing to do, but it isn't that dumb. Like, should he be walking through the park alone at 2 in the morning? No, okay, he can objectively see that this might have been asking to get mugged. But, like, mugged. Guillermo's a New Yorker. He knows how to get mugged. It's fine. He got mugged a few years ago, and when the guy saw he was carrying an iPod Classic with a crack down the center of the screen, he made a face and gave it back. He's a dude, and a bigger dude, so you know, he has some privilege there, and he knows Staten Island pretty well. He's cut through the park 100 times slightly earlier in the evening, and like, it should have been fine. Instead, one minute he's walking along the path by the duck pond, navigating by the light of his phone, and the next minute the beam hits this woman. She appears literally out of nowhere on the path in front of him, like she was just standing there in the dark, even though he could have sworn no one was there a second ago. Dressed all weird, in kind of culty robes, with long blonde hair that falls all the way down to her waist. Guillermo shrieks and jumps backward a step, and then his brain goes, "Lady, lady, just a normal lady, no need to be scared." And he makes himself laugh, heart pounding. "Holy shit, I'm sorry, you scared the crap out of me." She tilts her head and his brain fills in, "A lady alone in the park at 2 a.m., she's probably more scared of you than you are of her." So he adds in an ironic, "Ah," in a particularly not heterosexual way to reassure her. "What makes it holy?" she asks, and he has no idea what kind of accent that is. What? "Never mind. Are you a virgin?" Guillermo's mind goes absolutely blank. "Oh, sorry. Inappropriate question. I meant to say, where do you work?" "I am a bake cinnamon rolls?" Guillermo doesn't mean for that to come out as a question. But in fairness, it's 2 in the morning, and a strange culty lady with an accent is maybe trying to sex traffic him. He's pretty sure he listened to a podcast episode about this once, but he can't remember how he's supposed to stay sexy and not get murdered. Or maybe it was a myth debunking podcast? Aren't sex trafficking stranger danger satanic cultists myths? "Okay," his maybe sex trafficker says, and beams at him. "Close enough." She snaps her fingers, and then there's a sharp knock at the top of Guillermo's head, and everything goes black. So, okay, why was Guillermo walking through the park alone at 2 in the morning anyway? Guillermo is a baker. A really good baker. His tia is a baker. His abuelo was a baker. His mom makes killer buñuelos. It's kind of in his DNA. Some people are born to be artists. Some people are born to play sports. Guillermo was born to feed people. The bone-deep satisfaction he gets from watching someone eat something he made and then come back for more, that's just something you either have or you don't, as far as Guillermo is concerned. He lucked into the job at Carla's Coffee House almost 6 years ago, after spectacularly burning out at Panera Bread, which he super doesn't want to get into. After living through his stint as Carla's baking assistant slash part-time barista slash Amy the waitress's part-time babysitter, which either makes or breaks someone in the family coffeehouse business, Carla got arthritis in both hands, and Guillermo inherited the bakery, which he now rules with an iron fist. He loves the bakery, even when it's 500 degrees in a New York summer and he's sweating his ass off, in front of the ovens making the cinnamon rolls as big as your face that people come to Carla's for. And Carla's opens for the early morning grab-a-pastry-and-a-coffee-before-work crowd at 7 a.m., which means Guillermo needs to be at the bakery at 4:30 every day to start convincing yesterday's dough to rise from the dead and cooperate with him. And that means he needs to wake up at 3:45 if he's sleeping at his apartment, or 4 if he spent the night at his boyfriend's. He had spent the night with Freddy, actually, in the most literal sense of the word. He didn't get any actual sleep, because at 9 p.m., Guillermo's usual bedtime before a morning shift, Freddy decided to tell him he was moving back to London. No conversation about it, no, "Will you come with me, honey?" Just that. "I'm moving back to London." Just thinking about it makes Guillermo's stomach feel weighted down and sick. They talked for a few hours. They both tried and failed not to cry, And then Guillermo was out the door, walking the familiar dark path to the coffee shop. What's the difference between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m., really? Just the quantity of drunks versus commuters. It shouldn't have made any difference at all. Waking up is weird, the way it always is after fainting. Like, it never feels weird that you're on the floor. It feels normal to be asleep because you're asleep all the time. It has to slowly dawn on you that it's weird that you're on the floor and that you weren't actually drinking, so why does your head hurt, and that people don't typically touch you when you're asleep.
Stop,
Guillermo says, batting weakly at whatever is touching him, and then opens his eyes. The first thing he notices is that he isn't wearing a shirt, and he's covered in goosebumps. The second thing he notices is that he's in a car, but not in a seat. He's on the floor of a moving car, like a big car, an SUV or maybe a limo, and the culty lady from before is sitting a few feet away from him. And there are at least three hooded figures in the car with him, and someone is trying to unzip his jeans. He screams at the top of his lungs and flails wildly in panic. Nothing much happens because his hands are fucking handcuffed.
Wraith, that is very loud,
the culty lady says, making a face.
Do we have any... Oh, yes, thank you, Wraith.
As a hooded figure with no discernible face or features shoves a cloth into Guillermo's mouth. He is being gagged. He is already handcuffed. He has been kidnapped, and now he is bound and gagged. And another hooded figure is taking his pants off. He makes a frightened noise behind the gag, his stomach going cold with fear. What are you supposed to do in this kind of situation? True Crime Podcast did not prepare him for this.
Okay, we're almost there,
the culty lady says, apparently to a driver. She's frowning down at what looks like an old-fashioned Palm Pilot. It looks like the exact model Guillermo's Tio had in the 90s.
It's one more right turn, okay? Wraith, finish dressing him.
Guillermo shrieks into the gag a few more times as two hooded figures simultaneously tug off his pants and force something down over his face. There are a few confused seconds of frantic wiggling and yanking before Guillermo realizes that he's been half-poured into an old-fashioned silk dress. He says half because the top part of the dress is bunched awkwardly around his neck since his hands are still fucking handcuffed. What the fuck? He tries to shriek through the gag, and the culty lady gives a little wince like she agrees.
Okay, she says with a sigh. Do the hand maneuver.
One of the hooded figures, Wraith's, sits on Guillermo's legs while another grabs his arms and a third one unlocks his hands. There's some more flailing and yelling, and he really almost knocks the Wraith on top of him off onto the seat of the car, but in the end it's 3-1. In short order, Guillermo is back in the handcuffs, wearing an off-the-shoulder silk dress, and the car rolls to a stop.
Showtime!
The culty lady says, clapping her hands. And then Guillermo is being dragged out of the car and up to the door of a dilapidated old mansion. Guillermo tries screaming, but there's only so much he can do with the gag in his mouth. Soon they're through the ominous front door and into a cobwebby, run-down-looking foyer. The house looks like ruined finery, like it was beautiful once, maybe in Louisa May Alcott's day, but no one set foot in it since Joe March left the streets of Manhattan for marriage in Connecticut. Why are you thinking about Little Women at a time like this? He accuses himself hysterically, and then the Wraiths are dragging him up some terrifyingly rotten stairs and into a wide room with floor-to-ceiling windows and a bare wooden floor. It looks like a ballroom, he thinks, dazed. Like the ballroom where Laurie sees Meg living it up and then slut-shames her a little bit. Moonlight pours in through the windows, and then something in the shadows moves. Guillermo flinches back, handcuffs around his wrists jingling.
Okay, let's get this over with,
the culty lady says, pulling out a scroll from one of her sleeves. She clears her throat.
Oh wait, lights, please? I can't read anything in here. Can someone get the lights?
Candle flames spring into being at the old-fashioned sconces across the room, and Guillermo sees that he was right. The gold-framed mirrors and polished wooden floor couldn't be anything but a ballroom. The candle flames also reveal someone sitting on the floor on the other side of the ballroom. A man. He has pale skin and long, lustrous black hair, a neatly trimmed black beard. He's wearing old-fashioned clothes and a look of steadfast, noble suffering on his undeniably handsome face. Oh yeah, he's handsome. He looks like Antonio Banderas as Armand in Interview with the Vampire. If you like that kind of thing. He's also chained to the wall, a long length of silvery chain connecting his ankle to a huge wall shackle in a lazy arc. There's a similar wall shackle and long chain at the opposite side of the ballroom. The culty lady clears her throat again. At some point when Guillermo was staring at his fellow captive, she put on a little pair of wire-rimmed reading glasses.
"Nandor the Relentless," she says, reading from her scroll. "You have been a bad, bad vampire."
Guillermo makes a surprised noise behind his gag, but she ignores him.
"You have murdered Baron Afanas, and now you pay the price. The Vampiric Council has sentenced you to death by blood poisoning."
"Outrageous," the handsome man mutters. He has a nice voice and another accent Guillermo can't quite place.
"Wraiths!" the culty lady shrieks. "Dispense the holy water!"
One of the wraiths removes Guillermo's gag. A second wraith produces a plastic bottle of holy water, instantly recognizable. That's the same stuff Guillermo's mom picks up from the church on Wednesdays because his abuela can't always make it to Mass but watches the televised one every Sunday morning and wants it to still be consecrated. A third wraith pinches Guillermo's nose shut and forces the bottle down Guillermo's throat. Guillermo swallows on instinct, but a lot of the water ends up going down his front. It tastes like regular water. Maybe a little rusty. Unfiltered, for sure.
"Great,"
the culty lady says approvingly, although she steps primly back from the water droplets spilling off Guillermo's dress. The wraiths hook Guillermo's handcuff chain to the chain opposite the handsome man, Nandor something, and drop him. He goes down pretty hard.
"The Vampiric Council appreciates your business," the culty lady says, rolling up the scroll. "Have a nice death."
"Fucking guy," Nandor says, sounding peeved. Or maybe it's fucking guide? That doesn't make any sense, though. Then the wraiths and the culty lady simply vanish. It's impossible how completely they vanish. They don't leave, they don't step towards the door, they're just gone. Guillermo is left alone with the world's most handsome man, both of them chained to the wall. Guillermo says, and there's a little clinking sound as Nandor turns to look at him. His mouth goes a little dry, maybe from fear.
"Hi?"
"Speak to me," Nandor says, sounding pretentious.
God, he has a good profile. Just, Guillermo doesn't know how someone can have a perfect forehead, but Nandor has a perfect forehead. A really good brow bone.
"Remind me you are a rational creature."
"I am speaking to you," Guillermo says. "Actually, I spoke first."
"Oh," Nandor says. "Whatever. You look and smell extremely delicious, but I will resist until I am sapped of the last of my strength and can no longer endure the temptation."
Guillermo is dripping with fear, sweat, and holy water, and he's wearing a cranberry-colored silk dress that clings to his torso. Actually, maybe too closely to his torso. He doesn't think the back zipper is done all the way up, and the off-the-shoulder straps are kind of digging into his arms. Before swirling out into yards and yards of fabric, his bare feet are poking out from the bottom of the skirt, a little muddy. He says carefully. "Thank you, I think."
"You are welcome," Nandor says magnanimously.
"So," Guillermo says, "you're a vampire?"
"Yes."
"Like, is that a metaphor, or do you actually, like, drink blood and burn in the daylight and stuff?"
"Yes."
That wasn't really a yes or no question, so...
"Well, it was a very boring question, little morsel. Yes, vampires are real, magic is real, things do go bump in the night, blah, 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 humans are food. I don't want to be having this discussion on my last night on this earth."
"My name's Guillermo," Guillermo says, ignoring how the skin of his arms prickles,
hearing Nandor call him Little Morsel. He hopes that's just his survival instinct at work.
"Okay," Nandor says. "And I am Nandor the Relentless."
"The Relentless,"
Guillermo repeats.
Is that your real last name?
It is a title, because I just never relent.
That's cool, Guillermo says and scrubs at his face with his hands. Look, do you have any thoughts on how we could, like, escape?
There is no escape, Nandor says, gesturing languidly at the wall of windows. Silver binds me to the wall, so I cannot break it. Tomorrow the sun will meet me, and if I have the strength, I will step into it and die in a fiery inferno befitting of my almost 800-year-long life. If not, I will wait in the shadows through a long and restless day, and then maybe it will drive me mad, and I will forget myself and drain you, after which point I will die in a fiery inferno, but from the inside out, which is much yuckier, because of the holy water running through your veins like acid.
Oh, Guillermo says.
Yes, oh.
There's a long, extremely uncomfortable pause as Guillermo plays those scenarios through. Obviously, if Nandor drains him, he imagines Nandor's mouth on his neck, sharp teeth puncturing the delicate skin, sucking the life right out of him. That would be bad. But in the other option, where Nandor self-immolates in the daylight to avoid drinking Guillermo's holy water-infused blood, maybe the culty lady and the wraiths come back and eat him themselves. Or maybe they just forget about him and he slowly starves to death chained to this wall.
I don't want to die, he says out loud without meaning to. His voice sounds unnaturally thick to his own ears.
Eh, Nandor says. You get used to it.
What, like, are you saying dying isn't that bad?
No, it is extraordinarily painful, Nandor says dismissively. It has been 750 years, but I remember that much. You just get used to it.
Guillermo has no idea what to say to that. The silence returns, more uncomfortable than before.
It is a good thing I am not super hungry, Nandor says. Otherwise this would be uncomfortable.
You already ate?
Guillermo's mind flashes to missing persons reports on the news. The podcast he listened to last year about the suspected Staten Island serial killer. The shock of seeing the woman waiting for him in the shadows of the park. He is not sure he wants to hear the answer to this question.
I had some of my housemates' leftovers, Nandor says, which is a disconcertingly normal thing for a vampire to say.
His gaze goes distant and far away.
She will be very angry with me when she discovers it. She wrote her name on the forehead in Sharpie marker, but now she will never have cause to berate me again.
Is she your...
He hesitates over girlfriend and wife, neither of which seem appropriate. Can you have a girlfriend if you're 800 years old?
Lover?
Nandor snorts.
Not recently, he says, sounding peeved. Not that I miss being invited to the weekly mini-orgy with her and Laszlo anyway. Laszlo has been getting on my last nerve for weeks, months, maybe. 80 years or so.
Guillermo attempts valiantly to process this.
Who is Laszlo?
Another huge sigh.
My other housemate.
And are they also a vampire?
Oh yes, Nandor says. It is me, Nadja, Laszlo, and Colin Robinson, who was living in the basement already when we moved in.
Somehow Guillermo doesn't find all this impossible to believe. It's a little embarrassing, actually, how quickly he's incorporating vampires into his worldview. It's like his inner 14-year-old was just waiting for all the concentrated fear and longing he felt while lurking on Vampire Chronicles mailing lists to be relevant to his life again. And now here he is, 32, alone again, and somehow still perfectly ready to accept the reality of vampires into his heart.
Okay, now you,
Nandor says, breaking through Guillermo's spiraling thoughts.
What?
It is your turn. I shared about my life. I don't relent. I live with 3 other vampires. Now it is your turn. Remember, we are making conversation, so I don't forget myself and think, oh, what is this delicious little snack doing here? I should eat him up right now, and then forget about the holy poison in your veins.
Like owls,
Guillermo says stupidly.
Like owls,
Nandor repeats, thick eyebrows raised. He has really nice eyebrows.
Like, that's why you're not supposed to use rat poison, Guillermo explains, feeling himself flush.
Oh no, is flushing like a come and get it kind of thing?
For vampires?
He tries to stop flushing and flushes harder.
Because the rats die of the poison, but then the owls feed on the rats and the owls end up dying of rat poison too. And owls are, super important for local ecosystems.
Also, Nandor says, sounding outraged, they are owls. What kind of sicko would want the poison an owl?
Yeah, Guillermo says, relieved.
Exactly.
I will instruct Nadja and Laszlo's familiar, Topher, to stop buying rat poison immediately, Nandor says with a decisive jerk of his chin. He can catch the rats with his bare hands instead, the little rascal.
His expression darkens.
Oh, I forgot. I won't do that, because I am going to die tonight or perhaps tomorrow.
Guillermo says, groping for something to make Nandor feel better.
So what did you want me to talk about?
Anything. Your life. What pointless little activities do you fill your pointless life with?
I'm a baker, Guillermo says. I work at,
he swallows back the name of the coffee house. It doesn't feel like a good thing to say its name here in the dark of the mansion, even if Nandor is right and neither of them are making it out of here.
I work at a coffee house.
A baker, Nandor repeats. Like breads and crackers and little doggy foods and things?
And things,
Guillermo says, feeling vaguely insulted.
Nandor nods. And are you a good baker?
Guillermo is a good baker. Like, a really good baker. It's pretty much the first thing people think about when they think about Guillermo. Oh, hey, that guy is all about his job, and he's really good at it. Or no, not that. That guy has a feeding people thing, probably, like Celeste reminds him every time he makes something with a particular regular in mind. He's a dab hand with your classic pasteles, conchas, polvorones, ojos de buey, orejas, and your coffee cakes and muffins and cinnamon rolls as big as your face.
I do experiments sometimes, he blurts out. Like, I made some black and whites a while back where I infused the chocolate with espresso and red chili oil. And the vanilla with cardamom pods. Someone told me I could have gone on the Great British Bake Off with those. You know, if I were British.
As soon as it comes out of his mouth, he's flushing again. What, does he think he's going to impress a vampire with his baking? It's probably been like 720 years since the last time Nandor ate anything.
But I love the Great British Baking Off.
Guillermo blinks.
You do?
Yes, yes,
Nandor says enthusiastically. He has kind of a dorky smile, actually. The fangs poke out over his lips.
Colin Robinson wired up the cables and Topher showed us the ways of the Roku. Paul Hollywood is a, how did Topher say it? A major cutie pie. I want them to ravage me.
Guillermo has to squeeze his eyes shut for a second, just trying to internalize the fact that the most handsome man, well, not alive, but in existence, might be queer, and also thinks Paul fucking Hollywood should ravage him.
Tell me other things you could bake in the Great Bake Off, Nandor demands. What would be your showstopper bake?
Guillermo thinks about the bakery specials board, the stuff he loves to make, but not every week for the rest of time, or else he'll be doomed to carpal tunnel at age 40.
There's a, kind of cherries jubilee I made for my friend's birthday one time. It's this thick cherry sauce over a homemade dark chocolate chunk ice cream. You have to use really sour cherries, though, and they take forever to pit. It's murder on the wrist. But, so you pour the cherry sauce over the ice cream, and then you pour brandy over the cherry sauce, and then you set it on fire, and you're left with this beautiful caramel glaze over everything.
It had been for Celeste's birthday, and her birthday was the week before Halloween, so everyone was wearing costumes that they'd just done the yearly Interview with the Vampire / Hocus Pocus double feature. Freddy didn't love violent movies. And Guillermo brought it out with fake plastic fangs in his mouth and a long black Armand wig pulled over his hair. She'd watched him set it on fire in the darkness of the coffee house, and the blaze had leapt up so high and the cherries had been so violently, suggestively red and glistening that she'd exclaimed,
What is this memo? The death of Lestat?
It had been a good night, even if Freddy hadn't wanted to kiss him with the fangs in his mouth.
That wouldn't work very well in the tent, Nandor says, and Guillermo shakes his head to clear it.
What?
The tent. It is very full of light and open to the air, Nandor says. They have never once filmed an episode at nighttime. It does not match their brandings.
He sounds almost wistful, like the film schedule is the only thing that is stopping him from going on the show, maybe?
The drama would not show to best effect, Guillermo.
Oh, he says. I guess not.
You have to think about these things, or you will never win Star Baker.
Yeah, Guillermo says. Hey, can you actually eat food? Or just blood?
Just blood.
Oh, because on Buffy, Spike could also eat other stuff.
Human food does not sustain us,
Nandor says, voice dropping, brows drawing together, a storm visibly brewing on his face.
It makes us violently ill to try, just like how eating you will kill me, so stop trying to tempt me into making a mistake.
Hey, hey,
Guillermo says, shifting. The chain clinks on the floor between them. I'm not trying to tempt you into anything. Nandor makes a scoffing noise.
No, seriously. I want to live, okay? Do you want to live?
Guillermo's voice hardens without his permission.
Seriously? I'm asking you if you want to live.
Okay, Nandor says, sounding peeved. Okay, yeesh. I want to live, I suppose. No need to shout.
So, Guillermo says, what happens if they come back tomorrow night and we aren't dead?
They will give you more holy water, probably, and wait another day. They are really gung-ho about this whole death by honey trap thing on account of how I killed the Baron with a honey trap.
Okay, Guillermo says, not thinking about what Nandor might mean by honey trap. And you're not hungry right now, you said? Because you had leftovers earlier?
I'm not starving,
Nandor clarifies. His eyes gleam a little in the darkness.
I did not say I was not hungry.
How? Guillermo swallows. How often do you need to eat?
That earns him an eye roll.
How often do you need to eat?
2 or 3 times a day, Guillermo says. But there's no way you eat that often.
How do you know?
Because there would be, like, missing persons reports. People would notice.
Well, you don't always eat one person in one go,
Nandor says.
You can get 5 or 6 meals out of an adult, or more than that if they've got some nice meat on their bones. More body, more blood, more meals.
Unless they have high blood pressure.
High blood pressure makes meal planning a real pain in the ass, let me tell you.
Guillermo finds himself curling his arms protectively over his stomach, trying to hide his arteries, which is pointless.
But hey, you take your blood, you put some in the cup, boom, you got cup blood. Then you take your blood, you heat it up. It's very nice. Blood in a mug. It doesn't all need to be right out of the throat.
Hot blood, cold blood, cup blood, mug blood. It's like one of those awful would-you-rather questions. Would you rather be stung by one bee every day for the rest of your life, or be stung 1,000 times at once and then never be stung by a bee again? Would you rather live forever but only eat one thing for all eternity, or live your short, pathetic life in a world where tamales and cinnamon rolls and cubano and jalapeno cheddar lye rolls exist and you can eat them? He can't imagine only eating one thing for the rest of his life and having it be a liquid.
Is that seriously it? He asks without thinking. You don't ever spice it up?
Of course we do, Nandor says defensively. For example, if a human has been doing drugs, okay, now you have some drug blood, or drunk blood, or...
Okay, Guillermo says. So you can have blood mixed with other stuff? Does it have to be premixed in the vein, or can you do stuff after the fact? Like, have you ever tried adding some cinnamon to a mug of hot O positive? Or making blood cocktails? How much blood would you actually need to add to a mocha in order to make the mocha digestible for you? Hasn't there ever been, like, a vampire bartender or a vampire cook before?
Nandor is staring at him, a stunned expression on his face.
Cinnamon,
he says, like this is a foreign concept.
Yeah, Guillermo says. Any kind of spice. Cardamom or vanilla or star anise or habanero oil or angostura bitters or...
Nandor isn't blinking.
Guillermo, he says in a low, urgent voice, have you ever wanted to become a vampire?
Guillermo feels like his heart is on fire. His face and chest are a furnace, and he's embarrassingly sure his nipples are hard.
There are great benefits, Nandor says fast. You never die. That's a good one. You can turn into a bat. Big perk. You can fly. You get invited to all the vampire-only sex parties. You can use hypnosis.
I'm going back to England, Freddy said, face creasing with familiar warm sympathy. It was the same look he'd given Guillermo when he talked through all his reasons for quitting his job at Panera Bread, even though he didn't have a new job lined up right away. The look he'd given him when Guillermo confessed that he was worried about coming out to his family. Guillermo associates that look with comfort, reassurance, warm, lanky arms, the potent understanding that things might suck right now, but he had a boyfriend who wanted him and liked him and wanted to stick it out with him.
What?
Guillermo said, shocked.
Just like that?
The look got even more sympathetic, but the warm embrace didn't come.
Are you really that surprised?
Freddy had asked him, very gently. Guillermo says to Nandor, blinking.
What? You want to make me a vampire?
No, Nandor says promptly. I want to make you my familiar.
What's a familiar?
He has a vague association with witches and pets, maybe. He doesn't remember any familiar stuff from the Vampire Chronicles, and definitely not from Buffy.
It is like an unpaid internship, Nandor says, but the way he says it makes Guillermo suspect he has no idea what an unpaid internship is. You take care of me and my needs for a little while, a couple of years maybe, and then when you have proven yourself worthy of eternal life, I will make you a vampire. It's a good deal. You make me cinnamon and cardamom blood cocktails, tidy up around the house and such for a while, and then I will take you in my arms and drink the blood of your life down, as I already long to do, and feed you the blood from my own veins, and then I will teach you all the secrets of eternal life as my companion and friend. The usual deal.
Guillermo says, feeling a little faint. Nandor is looking at him with raw longing. Like he wants to bury his teeth in Guillermo's pulse right now. Future and death by holy water be damned.
Aren't we both going to die tomorrow, though?
Nandor visibly deflates.
Oh, he says. Right, I keep forgetting that.
Guillermo gives him a weak smile.
Yeah, he says.
I just really like that blood cocktail idea, Nandor says wistfully. It speaks of great creativity and insight in one so young.
I'm 32, Guillermo says. That's not that young for a human. Not that it's old, either. I don't know, you don't look that much older than me. I may be as old as you were when you died.
Oh, I am sorry, Nandor says, not sounding very sorry. Do you have much time left?
Well, Guillermo says, no.
Damn it, Nandor says. Forgot about the dying again. Eesh. I don't know why it's so hard for me to keep hold of that detail.
Well, probably it hasn't happened that much. Just like once before, for you.
Nandor shrugs. A silence falls over the room. Guillermo thinks maybe the sky is getting lighter, but infinitesimally. He wishes Freddy had picked any other night to break up with him. He doesn't want to spend his last few hours alive thinking about how his boyfriend doesn't love him anymore. Or whatever, his boyfriend loves him, but doesn't think they work anymore and doesn't think their lives fit together, and wants Guillermo to know that not every relationship lasts forever and that's okay. Bullshit. Guillermo knows what it means when your boyfriend doesn't want to be your boyfriend anymore. He tries to cry without moving his face, so maybe Nandor won't notice.
Do you want to know a secret?
Nandor whispers, apparently not paying attention to Guillermo at all.
Sure,
Guillermo says, hoping his voice sounds normal. Sometimes I follow Topher to the CVS, Nandor continues, still hushed, a little wistful. I leave him to pick up the dildos or the agony pears or whatever other little tchotchkes he is there to pick up, and I sneak away by myself to the scented candle aisle. He says scented candle aisle with quiet reverence. Do you know the Yankee candles?
Yankee candles.
Yes. Nandor's eyes shine in the candlelight. I cannot bring them back to the house, because Naja says they have a putrid stench of rotten human food she does not like. But I like to sniff them all. Vanilla lime, cashmere, balsam and cedar, Christmas cookie, and my favorite, cinnamon stick. It reminds me of... I don't even know what it reminds me of, but I like the smell. There's no reason for Guillermo to get choked up over this, except that he's already crying and it's easier to keep going than stop the train in its tracks. But it's such a stupid, lonely image, the 700-year-old monster quietly smelling convenience store candles because they remind him of food he must not even remember.
Oh, Nandor says. You are crying.
Yeah, Guillermo says and sniffles. Sorry, I'm okay.
Don't be sorry,
Nandor says, and then he moves, almost too fast for Guillermo to track. A smooth, graceful arc from his side of the ballroom to Guillermo's, the length of chain straightening behind him. In the next eye blink, he is kneeling at Guillermo's side, only a few inches away. He looks... Guillermo doesn't know how he looks. Hungry? Fascinated? All the hair on his body is standing up again.
May I drink your tears?
Guillermo chokes.
What?
Your tears,
Nandor says, leaning in dangerously, like he's going to kiss Guillermo or eat him or something. Up close, he is unmistakably inhuman. He's too pale. The shadows love him too much. He looks dead and no less beautiful. Maybe even more beautiful. Guillermo has to fight back the ridiculous impulse to say, I have a boyfriend. Because, well, first of all, Nandor probably isn't going to kiss him. He's losing his battle against temptation and is about to murder Guillermo, probably. And second of all, he doesn't have a boyfriend, does he? Guillermo says, still trying and failing to get himself under control.
Won't my tears also be full of holy water?
Nandor shrugs.
Maybe. Probably not, though. Those things tend to be blood only. Nobody really knows why. Tears are not super nutritious, but they are a nice seasoning sometimes.
He says seasoning like he's showing off his knowledge, like it's proof he was listening.
Okay,
Guillermo says and sniffs again.
Go for it.
Nandor cups one hand against Guillermo's cheek. His hand is room temperature, but dry and clean. Guillermo thinks about the plane ticket Freddy apparently bought 3 months ago and never mentioned to him because he wasn't ready for the breakup conversation. But that is when Kayak.com told him was the best time to buy and save, and weeps into Nandor's palm. Nandor doesn't try to comfort him, just watches, intent, a few inches away as Guillermo cries, and it's strange and weird and rude and honestly sort of frighteningly intimate. When Guillermo's tears lull, Nandor brings the little puddle in his hand up to his mouth and sips it. Instantly, his eyes close and he groans.
Guillermo,
he says, low and sort of playfully helpless.
You are a feast.
Guillermo's heart kicks in his chest and Nandor groans again like he heard it. He licks his own palm clean, exactly like the customers at Carla's do when they're eating Guillermo's cinnamon buns as big as your face. And the icing drips down over their fingers, like Guillermo has fed him and he likes it, like he's hungry for more. And Guillermo has a feeding people thing, everyone knows that, which is what he'll blame it on later when he murmurs, "Do you want more?" into the little space between them, Nandor's eyes snapping back up to his.
"Yes,"
Nandor says, and Guillermo lifts up his tear-stained face and closes his eyes. He waits for the cool, dry brush of Nandor's fingers, expecting him to gather up his tears like a child scooping up cake batter from the corners of a bowl. But that isn't what happens. Instead, he feels the press of Nandor's knuckles under his chin, keeping him in place. And then he feels the unmistakable scratch of Nandor's beard as Nandor presses his lips to Guillermo's cheek. Guillermo gasps, jerking a little against the ballroom wall with a clatter of chains. And Nandor makes a happy little sound in the back of his throat and licks his jaw like a sexy golden retriever. Guillermo snorts and is briefly worried it's going to ruin the moment, but Nandor just smiles. Guillermo can feel it against his face and laves the hollow under his left eye, the feeling wet and flexible and bizarre. Guillermo's arms come up around Nandor on sheer instinct, accidentally pulling Nandor towards the strangest half-chub Guillermo's ever experienced. And Nandor follows the movement and straddles him, lips fastening eagerly on Guillermo's jaw. What follows is the weirdest makeout Guillermo has ever participated in, Nandor licking the sorrow from his face like a customer at Carla's licking the plate clean, then sucking devastating little bruises into Guillermo's jawline, the tear and sweat-warmed crease of his neck. Guillermo forgets not to kiss back, but it's pretty clear Nandor doesn't mind as he starts grinding enthusiastically in Guillermo's lap. Nandor mouths against his throat, sucking hard at the pulse throbbing there, and Guillermo thinks in a fevered haze that he'd let him do it. He's not sure about the whole unpaid internship thing, but sure, he'd let Nandor take his life if he wanted it. Vampires are sexy and powerful and good kissers, and who cares about Guillermo's life anyway? What's he even doing with it? Making pastries and paying rent and not doing enough to make Freddy love him? Maybe being a vampire would be better. Maybe it would be easier. Maybe if Nandor swallowed him down and he filled him up, he'd finally be enough for somebody. No, Nandor whispers and very sweetly kisses the enormous hickey he made over Guillermo's carotid artery. You will not die today, little baker. Right, right, because of the poison. They're not going to die until tomorrow. Do you want to fool around? Guillermo asks breathlessly, like that's not what they're already doing. It sounds like a better way to pass the time than talking about the weather. Nandor grins at him, beautiful and dorky again, fangs gleaming in the soft light from the window. Your tears are divine, my tasty little friend, he says. For my next course, I would like to try your saliva. Guillermo starts laughing so hard they almost stop making out, but Nandor just starts laughing with him. A little awkward, like he doesn't get what's funny, but he wants in on the joke. And that sends another lance of tenderness through Guillermo's confused heart, and he stops laughing. Nandor takes the opening and sticks his tongue in Guillermo's mouth. Guillermo loses himself for a while, kissing him back. What do I taste like? Guillermo asks unsteadily when Nandor finally lets him breathe. They've sort of switched places, Nandor pressed up against the wall, Guillermo in his lap, silky cranberry dress slipping and sliding between them. Sweet, Nandor says and nips Guillermo's ear, dizzyingly sharp. Guillermo squeaks. Very sweet. One of his hands works its way up Guillermo's skirt, slides up his thigh. This is happening, Guillermo thinks, suddenly crystal clear. He's about to fuck a vampire up against the wall of a haunted mansion. And that will be the nicest thing that happens to him for the rest of his life, because this is probably the last orgasm he'll ever have. If he had to pick a last night on Earth, he guesses acting out his literal teenage fantasy isn't so bad. But if he could have chosen a final night... Nandor makes a happy noise into his mouth and gets one big hand wrapped around Guillermo's dick. It feels incredible and weird and exciting and terrifying all at the same time. Guillermo would have chosen to spend it with someone he loves, with someone who loved him. The first time with Freddy had been worse than this. Their glasses had knocked together and Freddy accidentally elbowed him in the ribs, and Guillermo had to pick a pubic hair out from between his teeth in the middle of things. But the whole thing feels suffused with a glowing pink light in Guillermo's memory. He'd been so warm with the knowledge that Freddy had chosen him, that Freddy could have chosen to be happy with anybody else, and instead he'd picked Guillermo, warts and all. Oh, Nandor says, nose brushing Guillermo's wet cheek. Okay, the tears are very nice, but I was hoping we could move on to blowjobs. I'm sorry, Guillermo says on a half sob, because of course he's ruining the nicest thing that was ever going to happen to him again in his life. He has to squeeze his eyes shut and press his hand to his mouth before he really loses it, shoulders convulsing but no sound coming out. Nandor's hands slip off him.
"Are you upset because you are going to die tomorrow in all likelihood?" Nandor asks him awkwardly, like this is an unrelatable problem, even though Nandor is also going to die tomorrow in all likelihood.
Guillermo shakes his head hard.
"Are you upset because you don't want me to fuck you?"
Nandor sounds a little indignant now.
"Because you can just say if you want to try something else. I like putting things in all kinds of holes, Guillermo."
Guillermo shakes his head again, tears leaking into his hands. More snacks if Nandor wants them. When he can speak again, he sniffs hard and drags his hands down his face like he can pull impassivity down like a curtain over himself.
I broke up with my boyfriend earlier tonight.
Oh, Nandor says.
Well,
Guillermo says, and his voice wobbles when he says it.
I guess he broke up with me.
That's a rough one,
Nandor says, with obviously fake sympathy.
Was he a very pleasant fellow?
Guillermo nods his head and sniffles hard.
Yeah, he's nice. He donates to UNICEF.
I don't know what that means.
He's scared of spiders,
Guillermo tries, eyes stinging.
But he doesn't want me to squish them, or even, put them outside in a cup because he's worried about the spiders freezing to death. So he just kind of walks around the apartment making alarmed noises.
And you're into that kind of thing?
Nandor asks doubtfully, and Guillermo chokes on a wet laugh.
Yeah, I guess so.
I myself have experienced the loss of many lovers. Most recently, Jen. And before Jen, Gail. And before Gail, Meg, and then Gail again. Gail, Marco, Gail, David, Ertha, Serena the Bloodluster, Arthur Miller, Brad the Tall, George Washington. I had 37 wives when I was alive, but that was a mutual thing. In that I became a vampire and they all mutually decided they didn't want to be married to me anymore.
Are you really that surprised? Freddy had asked him, familiar and sympathetic. Like he wasn't the one who dropped a 50-pound weight on Guillermo's chest. It feels like you've been elsewhere for months now. I suppose I thought maybe you'd be relieved.
Nandor keeps up his litany of lovers who have dumped him over the years, and the weight in Guillermo's chest gets bigger and bigger, like a snowball picking up speed. Freddy is the only man Guillermo has ever been in a relationship with. He's the only man who has ever wanted anything from him, honestly. He said he loved Guillermo. He knows Carla. He's hung out with Celeste. He's tried every item on the specials board except the ones with coconut because he doesn't like the texture. He's met Guillermo's mom. No one in the world knows Guillermo better than Freddy. And Freddy doesn't think he's worth it anymore.
Werewolf nothing penis thing, which was a shame,
Nandor is saying, a look of dark contemplation on his face.
And I was just afraid that...
I'm kind of afraid no one is ever going to love me again,
Guillermo blurts out, and humiliatingly his voice cracks on the last word. Nandor's face goes slack with shock. No, not shock. Recognition.
You too, he whispers.
The pressure in Guillermo's chest finally gets to be too much, and something important splinters and cracks. He reaches out, and Nandor reaches back, and the kisses this time are different. This time, kissing Nandor feels frantic, almost frightening. Feels like grabbing for the edge of the cliff one instant before plunging to his death. Like digging his fingers into a handhold in the rock. Like choosing to stay alive. Yeah, Guillermo breathes into Nandor's mouth, the answer to a question he didn't ask.
You can, yeah.
Yes,
Nandor whispers back, hushed, like he heard the question too. When Guillermo wakes up, it's daytime. The sun is shining in through the wall of windows, in little columns of dusty light, and Guillermo is lying square in the middle of one of the columns, warmed by the sun, but with his back absolutely killing him. For a disorienting moment, he thinks Nandor is left,
and he has just enough time to hate himself for forgetting what being single is like, for being so spoiled by having a boyfriend for so long that he forgot to prepare himself for the realities of hookup culture. A vast and awful series of lonely mornings after stretch out in front of him, and then he catches sight of Nandor across the room in a pool of shadow. "Oh," Guillermo says, jerking up to sitting with a scream of protest from his back. "You're still here."
"Yes," says Nandor. "I am chained to the wall. Did you forget?"
"Right," Guillermo says, and makes himself exhale slowly through his nose. "Right, yeah. That makes sense." He takes quick stock of himself. The terrible cranberry dress is a great deal worse for the wear, with some embarrassing stains on the silk. He's absolutely sure he stinks. His hair is probably a nightmare. It tastes like something died in his mouth, and his back is throbbing where it isn't aching. He also really has to pee. He says. "So, I'm going to open a window. Will you look away?"
"The sun won't kill me to look at," Nandor says, waving a dismissive hand.
He looks the same as last night, which is just unfair. Shockingly handsome, clothes perfectly in place.
"Just if it touches me. And even then, I get a couple seconds before I catch a blaze fully and die in a fiery inferno."
"No," Guillermo says awkwardly. I don't know if you remember how the human body works, but I definitely need to... nature calls. And I think going out the window is a better idea than going in the room."
"Oh," Nandor says, and his face scrunches up in disgust. "Yes, good idea, Guillermo. I will look away."
Guillermo opens the nearest window, relieved that it's the old-fashioned kind with window clasps and no screens, and crawls up onto the sill and looks outside. He'd hoped maybe there would be other houses or businesses with people nearby, but nope. He just sees trees. Are they even on Staten Island anymore? How long was he passed out in the car? He has his pee, disheartened. There's nothing to be done for the rest of it, so he just finger combs his hair and spits out the window a few times, trying to clear the sour taste from his mouth. He leaves the window open when he drops back into the room. It might be his last day alive. Might as well get some fresh air and bird noises while it lasts. He settles himself back down cautiously in his spot against the wall, wishing that he had, his phone or a book or anything to do except decide whether or not to look at the guy who sucked his dick last night, and must certainly be regretting it today. After a few moments, he decides to look and sees Nandor scowling at him from across the room.
"What are you sitting all the way over there for?" Nandor says accusingly.
Guillermo says, and then can't think of a single reason. He gets up and crosses the room into the shadows, and Nandor pulls him down with a satisfied noise and starts arranging Guillermo's limbs into, apparently, the most comfortable setup for Nandor.
"Did you slumber well?"
Nandor asks, settling and then resettling his head on Guillermo's thigh, then impatiently pulling Guillermo's hand into his hair. Guillermo repeats. "I guess."
"Because I didn't sleep at all," Nandor snaps, glaring up at him.
The effect is ruined a little by the tug he gives to Guillermo's hand, like an instruction to pet. Guillermo obeys and pets Nandor's hair. It's so surreal he briefly feels disconnected to his body, like he isn't even real anymore.
"Did I keep you up?"
"No," Nandor says crossly.
"Vampires cannot slumber at all without the little bit of our ancestral dirt to rest upon."
"And you didn't bring any with you?" Guillermo starts his next stroke on Nandor's forehead, and Nandor closes his eyes to let him do it.
"I did not know I was going to be kidnapped yesterday."
"I would keep some in a coat pocket for emergencies," Guillermo says, barely noticing what words are coming out of his mouth. Nandor is relaxing under his hand, going boneless in Guillermo's lap. He doesn't actually look well, now that Guillermo is taking the time to really look at him. He looks pale and waxy in the daylight, even out of direct sun, the shadows under his eyes a deep gray. He looks like a corpse. An incredibly handsome corpse, but not the way he looked last night. "Maybe just a teaspoon sewn into the lining of your jacket? Cape?"
cloak.
That way you could take a nap whenever you needed to.
Daring a little, Guillermo lets his hand trail down from Nandor's hair to his cheek, and then traces the sulky line of his mouth with his thumb. In spite of himself and his unbrushed teeth, a little warmth kindles in his belly.
No matter whose bed you fell asleep in.
Nandor's eyes open. So does his mouth.
You really would make an amazing familiar, he murmurs, lips brushing Guillermo's thumb.
Too bad we're gonna die today,
Guillermo says, and almost pushes his thumb into Nandor's mouth, except that he remembers he hasn't been able to wash his hands today. The line of Nandor's mouth gets even sulkier. Guillermo goes back to stroking Nandor's hair.
So that whole thing you told me about yesterday with the daylight driving you mad? How's that going?
I mean, it's mostly the lack of sleep, Nandor says with a little shrug. No one makes great decisions when they're overtired. You don't want to finger fuck my mouth?
Guillermo's face is instantly oven hot.
I'm kind of gross right now.
Nandor rolls his eyes.
It's your last day on Earth, and you're worried about the couple of germs?
Oh, right. They both keep forgetting that.
Anyway, Nandor continues,
an expression that Guillermo can only identify as a pout on his handsome dead face.
I am very tired, and I am very hungry, and I cannot eat you even though you are a fantastic meal. And you are an extremely delicious lover, and if you don't want to fuck me even though you got the full night's sleep and I did not, and you got a little bit of holy water to drink last night, and I haven't eaten since at least 8 p.m., then I think that is very unfair.
Wow,
Guillermo says. The heat has spread down from his face and is currently rolling over his shoulders.
So what I'm getting from that is that you're kind of selfish, huh?
No. Nandor says at once, indignant. I am a very giving and generous...
Guillermo pushes his thumb into Nandor's mouth, and Nandor swallows the rest of his sentence. He strokes Nandor's tongue with his thumb, and it's just as strange as he remembers. Wet and alive, but without human heat. Nandor makes a happy little hmm sound and sucks hard on his thumb, lips sinking down to the base of his finger. Guillermo's breath catches against his ribcage.
Don't worry, Guillermo says, the words kind of coming from nowhere. He's not usually a big dirty talker.
Freddy likes things to be simple. Guillermo does too, some of the time.
I can give you what you need.
Nandor moans around his thumb. Guillermo really wishes he could have brushed his teeth. They go a few rounds, getting up and moving to stay in the shadows as the sun slowly chases them across the room. They take a break when Nandor starts dozing on his shoulder mid-hand job, even though it's true that he can't stay asleep for more than 30 seconds at a time. Instead, they curl up under Nandor's cape and just cuddle a bit until the sun gets too close and they have to move again. It's not the worst lazy Saturday Guillermo has ever spent, except for the whole imminent death thing.
So, hey, he says, playing with one of Nandor's hands. Can I ask about the whole murder thing?
Sure,
Nandor says. His head is pillowed on Guillermo's shoulder, heavy and warm with Guillermo's own body heat. His beard is rough on Guillermo's skin in the best possible way. Guillermo's never particularly gone in for men with beards, but he thinks that's about to change.
I twice made the Tigris run red with blood. I did a whole eat, pray, love thing a couple of years ago where I murdered so many sailors on a boat that...
Guillermo says, completely unable to process that.
Not what I meant. I don't actually... I don't know how to think about that yet. I meant, like, the reason you're here. The murder of Baron somebody?
Oh, Nandor says. Baron Afanas, yes.
So, what happened there? Who was Baron Afanas?
Well, he was this extremely ancient and powerful vampire, Nandor says.
Guillermo sort of forgot to keep playing with Nandor's hand once the murder conversation started, so Nandor starts playing with his hand instead, tracing little circles over Guillermo's calluses.
He came here a few months ago to see if we were done conquering the New World yet. Actually, he tried to come and visit a few years ago, but we couldn't figure out how to sign the paperwork, so they sent him back to the Carpathians. This time, Topher figured out the iPad, so he showed up. He was like, "Hey, how is the world conquering going?" But we had kind of decided not to do that. Only we couldn't tell him we decided not to do that, because he definitely would have killed us all. So he asked us to take him out on the town and show him the new world, and we were like, "Yes, absolutely, Baron, we will totally do that," even though we were secretly planning to murder him at some point in the evening.
"Wow," Guillermo says. "So how did you do it?"
"Well," Nandor hedges, drawing the word out, "we started drinking the blood of some humans who were drunk, and then some humans who were on drugs. And suddenly the Baron didn't seem like such a bad guy. We were all kind of getting along and hanging out, and it was like, ah, we love the Baron. We could never kill the Baron, you know?"
"So you didn't kill the Baron?"
"Well," Nandor says again, drawing out the sound for even longer. "We were on our way home from the last human bar, and it was very late, like not really a great idea walking home with the sun right on the way, kind of late. And then the Baron saw that there were lights on inside the building, and the door was open with some steam coming out of it, and he was so drunk that he starts yelling, 'May I come inside? Please, may I have something to eat?' Even though we're like, 'Okay, Baron, it's a bad idea. You've had enough. Let's go home.'"
"I'm not seeing the murder part."
"I'm getting to it," Nando assures him. "So, okay, he's yelling, and then a human starts playing a song on the electronic radio, really loud. And the song goes on, and the singer goes, 'Come on over, baby.'"
"Come on over, baby, All I Want Is You, by Christina Aguilera?" Guillermo breathes. "That's on his 4 a.m. cinnamon roll playlist." "That counts as an invitation?"
"Well, apparently," Nandor says. "Because he just goes right on in there, wobbling away. And Nadja is like, 'Okay, we've got to go in after him and just make it quick, right? Otherwise, we're all going to fry in the sun.' So we decide to follow the Baron inside the open door, even though Laszlo was having a really hard time keeping upright on his feet. And then suddenly the Baron comes flying back out into the alley, screaming something about the spitting image of Van Helsing. And he's not looking where he's going, so he falls backwards on the mop handle. You know, onto a mop handle. And maybe it wouldn't have killed him, except Laszlo tried to help him, and he was so drunk and so clumsy that he knocked both of us over on top of the Baron and sort of forced him deeper onto the kebab."
"Oh my God,"
Guillermo says, and Nandor flinches.
"Hey, watch your language when you are 2 inches from my head."
"No," Guillermo says, sitting up. "Sorry, I just, I think I remember this."
Last week, he'd been alone in the bakery on a morning shift, and he'd left the door open while waiting for Marco to show up with the delivery truck, which was fine 9 times out of 10, but sometimes meant that a drunk guy or an unhoused person walked in through the door. If it was Jim or AJ who hung out on the block, Guillermo just gave them some day-olds and reminded them that they couldn't just come into the kitchen. If it was a drunk guy, that was annoying, but not annoying enough for Guillermo to go through the far more annoying process of keeping his phone on and stopping his work to open the back door for Marco while he was in the early morning baking zone instead. So the back door was open, and someone wandered in, and Guillermo's first thought was drunk old guy, because he was stumbling around and slurring his words a little, so he gave him the usual, "You can't be back here," spiel, and then the old guy was like, "I just need a little snack," and that's when Guillermo noticed that something was weird about his face. He was too pale, his eyes too sunken. He was too... maybe he was sick or something. Guillermo tried not to judge. And then the old guy lunged at him, and Guillermo didn't want to hurt a sick old man, but that was a fast lunge. Like, supernaturally fast, maybe.
"What did you do?"
Nandor whispers, eyes wide, which is how Guillermo realizes he's been explaining this whole story out loud.
So I was baking, right? I was holding a wooden spoon."
Nandor's eyes get even bigger.
"A spoon?"
"Yeah, so he lunged at me and I just kind of hit him with the spoon and said, like, 'Madre de Dios.'"
Nandor hisses, steam briefly burning out of his ears.
"And yeah, that happened. And he looked at me like, like he was seeing something that wasn't there. And then he ran away. When I got out to the alley, he was gone."
"Fucking hell," Nandor says.
Yeah, Guillermo says. Maybe it's a coincidence.
Nandor shakes his head, sending a cloud of dark hair directly into Guillermo's face. He brushes a few of the clingier strands away from his mouth.
So what happened? How did you end up getting arrested?
Well, we scooped up as many of the ashes and bones as we could, mostly into our hats, and we buried them in the backyard, and we were hoping that would be that. Unfortunately, the Baron's familiar was watching the whole time, and she brought an accusation to the Vampiric Council, and they summoned us. There was a trial. Tilda Swinton was a real pain in the ass, and I was found guilty and sentenced to death. Blah, blah, blah.
Wait, Guillermo says, frowning. Why just you? Why not all four of you? Weren't all your housemates part of it?
Oh, not Colin Robinson. He was actually secretly on the Vampiric Council the whole time because he is a traitorous little viper. Also, we would never invite him on a night out. He's kind of a buzzkill.
Okay, but what about Laszlo and Nadja? Why aren't they chained to the walls here too?
Nandor gives him an irritated look.
You have a lot of questions, Guillermo.
Oh, sorry, Guillermo says, raising his eyebrows. Am I keeping you from something important?
Nandor reaches over and gives Guillermo's dick an affectionate squeeze, and Guillermo jumps. He also makes a noise he refuses to call a squeak.
Maybe I do, Nandor says.
Come on, Guillermo says, 20% wanting to be seduced into more sex marathon, and 60% dreading more sex marathon without having any water or food in the interim. Or are you scared to tell me?
Nandor lets go of his dick and glares at him.
I'm not frightened of anything. I'm not even frightened of death, which is why I told the council that I did it all alone by myself, and that Nadja and Laszlo had nothing to do with it.
Guillermo stares at him, feeling abruptly out of his depth. Well, more out of his depth. Out of his depth in a different way.
So you took the blame because you wanted to die?
No, Nandor makes a frustrated noise. I don't want to die. I don't not want to die either. I've been alive for 800 years. It's complicated.
Uncomplicated?
Laszlo is still very young,
Nandor snaps, then looks ill and pulls the cape over his face, like a child hiding under the blankets. Guillermo's heart gives a plaintive little kick in his chest. He's put it through a lot in the last 24 hours.
Did you want to save your friend?
No,
Nandor says, muffled under the cape.
Because that would be dumb, but also kind of sweet.
Guillermo tugs the cape down to reveal Nandor's face, still screwed up with embarrassment, maybe? Discomfort, definitely.
He is not even 300 years old,
Nandor says, like Guillermo might say, Sky the barista is still in college.
And Nadja is his wife, and he is devoted to her, and Nadja is devoted to him, and they are devoted to each other. And, I mean, I have seen many things and lived many lives. I don't care about them, but, well, who would miss me the way they would miss each other?
I would, Guillermo whispers,
knowing it doesn't make sense that he met Nandor less than 24 hours ago, and Nandor is almost 800 years old, and Nandor kills and eats people. Nope, still not thinking about that.
I would have missed you.
Nandor stares up at him, eyes black and huge, and then lunges at his face as fast as the Baron. Guillermo meets him in the kiss, somehow ready for it. Nandor's hands cup his face and the back of his skull like he's afraid Guillermo's going to run away, like he's forgotten they're both literally chained to the wall.
I am very upset,
Nandor says breathlessly, between kisses, not sounding upset at all.
To have met you under these circumstances, Guillermo.
Yeah,
Guillermo says, heart aching.
Although, I guess before last night I wouldn't have been, available.
Your little spider freak has terrible taste and terrible timing,
Nandor says darkly. And Guillermo feels an immediate need to defend Freddy, and then he feels ashamed of wanting to defend Freddy when Freddy broke up with him, and then guilty about thinking about Freddy while making out with someone else, and then he feels guilty for making out with someone else while thinking about Freddy.
Will you pay attention to me?
Nandor complains, and then bites Guillermo's lip to punctuate the complaint. He bites so hard that it bleeds, a sudden spike of pain and a burst of copper on Guillermo's tongue. Guillermo and Nandor make shocked noises at the exact same time, and then Nandor groans, clutches him even tighter, arms suddenly in iron vice, holding Guillermo in place, and sucks. It feels like... Guillermo has no idea what it feels like. It feels fucking dangerous, feels inevitable, like there's nothing he can do to stop it now that it's happening. It feels good. He arches up into Nandor's hold, dick rock hard out of nowhere, and whimpers. And then, suddenly, without Guillermo tracking the movement at all, he's across the room, and his ears are ringing, and his whole body is screaming in protest. Because Nandor threw him into the fucking wall. What the fuck? Guillermo snarls, getting unsteadily to his feet, ready to tear Nandor a new one. But then he looks across the room and remembers why Nandor wasn't supposed to drink his blood. Shit, he says, and rushes over to where Nandor is on his hands and knees, spitting sizzling blood onto the floor and making agonized noises. What can I do? Can I help?
Good,
Nandor chokes out, sounding like the holy water has made an absolute wreckage of his vocal cords.
Back.
Guillermo backs up as far as he can, into the patch of late afternoon sunlight on the other side of the room. Nandor spits holy water-tainted blood up for another few minutes, and then finally wipes his mouth clean and gives Guillermo an unhappy look. Do I have to stay over here? Guillermo asks. He can still taste blood in his mouth. He wonders if Nandor can smell it. Nandor gargles unhappily and nods. Sorry, Guillermo offers, and then immediately feels embarrassed about it. He didn't cut his lip on Nandor's teeth intentionally. Is your throat super damaged?
It will heal,
Nandor says in a painful-sounding croak.
When next I sleep.
Oh, Guillermo says. And that's probably never going to happen again. They look at each other, Guillermo in sunlight, Nandor in shadow. It takes a long time for night to fall. When the vampires come back, they're as ready for them as they can be. They put both their clothes back on, and the candlelight sort of hides the worst of the stains. The cut in Guillermo's mouth is scabbed over and sore, but Nandor still insists that he has to sit on the other side of the room, because it will look more impressive that way. They don't talk that much more, though. Nandor's throat is a wreck, and after a full day with no water and a lot of crying, sweating, and orgasming, Guillermo's throat doesn't feel much better. After twilight fades and true dark sets in, Nandor tips his head to the side and rasps,
"They're on their way."
Guillermo has time to spread the skirt of his dress nicely around himself and pull the chain in a neat spiral by his feet before the ballroom doors swing open. Two hooded figures walk in, although they look different from the wraiths last night. Two pale faces are visible under the hoods.
"So,"
one of them says in a hideous rasp, more guttural than Nandor's.
"You made it through the day."
In an instant, he's standing before Guillermo, and in the candlelight, he is revealed to be another vampire. He's kind of buggy-eyed, white, with a mouth full of very sharp teeth.
"That does not matter,"
he says to Nandor, even though he's looking down at Guillermo.
"We will leave you with something to remember us by."
Then he lifts up a knife, gleaming in the candlelight, and Guillermo thinks, oh wow, this is really happening, he's about to die.
"No,"
Nandor says urgently. Guillermo can barely hear him over the blood roaring in his ears.
"Wait."
The vampire brings the knife down. Guillermo moves without thinking, on sheer instinct. He catches the knife with his hand, blade sinking into his palm with a sick, familiar meat-slicing sound, and wrenches it out of the vampire's hand. Simultaneously, he grabs for the chain shackling him to the wall and strikes the vampire on the side of his head. The vampire stumbles to his knees, clearly not expecting any of this, and Guillermo flips the knife in his sliced-up hand through a white-hot flare of agony, wraps the chain around the vampire's neck to keep him still, and slams the knife between his ribs, directly into his heart. In less than 20 seconds, the vampire is dead. Guillermo drops the body, panting, his hand screaming in pain. He switches the knife to his other hand. Across the room, Nandor and the other council vampire are staring at him, visibly shocked.
"Holy shitballs,"
the council vampire says, patting Nandor's arm with one hand.
"That little guy just killed Ludwig. They chained you up with a slayer?"
He looks at Nandor askance.
"And you survived?"
"Guillermo,"
Nandor says, the way you'd say, put down the gun or back away from the detonator.
"Is there something you want to tell me?"
Guillermo says, starting to shake. He doesn't drop the knife, though.
Do you need me to kill that guy?"
His voice breaks on the word kill.
"Definitely not,"
the council vampire says quickly, throwing back his hood. He's bald, wearing glasses. He kind of looks like Dilbert, to be honest.
"Oh, no," Nandor says. "Gullin Robinson is here to rescue me because he is a loyal friend and comrade."
He demonstrates his lack of shackle, because apparently while Guillermo was murdering someone, the other guy was unchaining Nandor.
"You betcha, roomie,"
Colin Robinson says.
Speaking of, should we skedaddle?"
"We are not leaving Guillermo here,"
Nandor says indignantly, and then winces when he looks at Guillermo.
Oh, right.
Guillermo is covered in blood. A lot of it is even his own.
You are going to let go of the knife, though, aren't you, Guillermo?"
"No,"
Guillermo says. He's still shaking. He is not letting go of the only weapon he's had in this whole ordeal.
"I love this knife. This is my emotional support knife now."
"Okay,"
Nandor says soothingly.
"Colin Robinson, why don't you go unchain Guillermo?"
Colin Robinson looks Guillermo up and down and makes a face.
"Pass."
"Well, I cannot unchain him,"
Nandor exclaims, sounding peeved.
"I will be overcome by the scent of his delicious blood and definitely eat them, and then we will both die after all."
Yeah,
Colin Robinson says.
"I think the more likely version is he kills you, my dude."
"Toss me the key," Guillermo says. He's smiling. He's not sure when he started smiling, but he's definitely speaking from behind a fixed grin now. "I'll unlock the shackle myself."
"Okay,"
Colin Robinson says, but he doesn't toss over the key.
"Nandor, are you sure you want to take this killing machine off the chain? We can pick someone up on the way home if you're starving."
"I'm not going to eat, Guillermo,"
Nandor says, sounding offended, like he hasn't been nonstop talking about eating Guillermo for the last 24 hours.
"He is my boon companion."
"Yeah, okay,"
Colin Robinson says, rolling his eyes. "I'm just saying, the last time you trauma bonded with somebody, you brought home a whole cult, and look how that ended up." Nandor hisses at him, and Colin Robinson tosses Guillermo a key. Guillermo ignores whatever conversation they have while he fumbles with the padlock and finally gets the fucking shackle off his ankle. When he shakes it loose and stands up, Nandor is giving him a yearning look.
"I must go,"
he says, and Guillermo's stomach clenches unhappily. Probably because he's starving, or maybe because he's lightheaded from blood loss.
"Colin Robinson can drive you home."
"Okay,"
Guillermo says faintly. Bye.
"Goodbye, my Guillermo,"
Nandor says, low and intimate. Then he shouts,
"Bat!"
turns into a bat and flies out the open window. Guillermo looks at Colin Robinson, who has fully ditched the cloak and is now standing there in ordinary business casual clothes, a grimace on his face.
"Am I hallucinating?"
Guillermo asks calmly. There's still a dead vampire at his feet, but maybe that can be explained some other way.
"Nope,"
Colin Robinson says and starts ambling towards the door.
"Come on, let's head down to the car. I'd be pretty mad about all the blood you're about to stain it with, but actually I have a pretty good relationship with the guys down at the dealership, and it's a real treat getting it detailed."
Guillermo follows him out the door and down a broad set of stairs.
"You know, not everyone knows the benefits of getting that kind of work done at the original dealership instead of taking the car to an auto mechanic shop or a regular car wash. But if you negotiate the right price when you're actually buying the car, you can get them to throw in pretty significant discounts on the more expensive elements of automobile TLC.
Not just detailing, but oil changes as well. One time I took my car to a lube shop to get some new wiper fluid and it was, well, twice as expensive would be hyperbolic, but there was a noticeable price differential there.
Guillermo has never been this tired in his life. It feels more and more like he's walking through a dream. The house falls away behind him, and he's following Colin Robinson into a perfectly boring sedan. He doesn't buckle his seatbelt when he climbs into the passenger seat. For one thing, he doesn't particularly want to be restrained anymore, safety be damned. For another, his left hand is full of knife, and his right hand is still bleeding. A lot. He focuses on wrapping it up in the excess silk of his dress. Colin Robinson is still droning on about car dealerships as the car pulls out of the driveway.
Are you doing this on purpose?
Guillermo asks, trying not to fall asleep against the cool glass of the window.
You betcha,
Colin Robinson says with a false little laugh.
See, I'm kind of fond of keeping my head on my shoulders, which means I'd like to limit my exposure to, vampire killing types. Even someone who, for the sake of total transparency here, could not be proven in court to be a killer of any kind. How long have you been in the vampire killing business anyway?
Guillermo tries to concentrate. His head feels like it's full of wadded up cotton balls.
15 minutes? 20 minutes?
Oh, wow, Colin Robinson says and signals a lane change even though the road is empty and black all around them. He must be driving at 20 miles an hour.
So this is kind of a big night for you, huh?
Yeah, Guillermo says, completely failing to fight back a yawn.
My boyfriend broke up with me.
Bummer.
Yeah,
Guillermo yawns again.
But I think it's gonna be okay.
Cool, cool. So am I dropping you at a gas station or the ER or what?
The dress was slick and cranberry color to begin with, and it's dark in the car even with the streetlights coming in, so Guillermo isn't sure how much blood there is.
I think maybe the ER.
You got it, kid. Man, Nandor's gonna owe me big for this one. Not only am I his savior, I'm giving his, you, door-to-door service. You know, that reminds me, Uber or Lyft would be your other option on a night like this, but I wouldn't recommend it because of surge pricing.
That's not a reliable bet. One time I was waiting for an Uber and almost 20 minutes went by. They had to find me another driver, and I says to him, I says, step on it, I was supposed to be there 20 minutes ago. And he stepped on it, and I was almost late to my appointment.
Guillermo loses the fight to keep his eyes open.
When he wakes up, he's in a hospital bed. He's never been in a hospital bed before, but the experience is somehow unmistakable. The mattress feels too thin, just this side of unstable. The blankets are lightweight. It smells like antiseptic, and there are lots of people talking a little distance away. One voice in particular. It's as familiar as his favorite sweater, or the apron hanging on the rack at Carla's. He opens his eyes. Pink hospital curtains create a little alcove around his bed. His mom is asleep in the chair beside him. That's gotta be hell on her back. And on the other side of the curtains, that warm, familiar voice.
I'm just saying we'll have to reschedule. My boyfriend is in hospital. And yes, thank you.
A pause.
Oh, yes, but we're getting through it.
A longer pause.
On the 5th, you say? Yes, I can be there on the 5th. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Then footsteps and the curtains part and Freddy steps into Guillermo's alcove. Sylvia, he says in a low voice, would you like me to? And then Freddy sees that Guillermo is awake and his eyes immediately fill with tears. Guillermo's heart pangs, and that's a familiar note, too. Freddy takes the empty chair on the other side of the bed, then reaches out and grasps Guillermo's hand, the non-bandaged one. His hand is warm and dry.
Hello, he says, almost whispering so as not to wake Guillermo's mom.
Hello, Guillermo says back.
How are you?
Freddy clears his throat.
How are you feeling?
Fine, Guillermo says, and is a little surprised to realize that it's true. His hand is throbbing a bit, but otherwise he feels fine.
I don't think they needed to keep me overnight. You went missing for a day and then showed up in A&E covered in blood, Freddy says, biting his lip, like he doesn't want to say it out loud. There's a policeman outside waiting to talk to you. I thought maybe... Darling, what happened? Guillermo begins and then stops. His mouth feels dry, even though he's definitely hooked up to an IV. Don't call me that. Freddy immediately looks guilty. A habit, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it's okay, Guillermo says and tugs his hand out of Freddy's so he can rub it over his eyes. It's just, why are you here? I'm your emergency contact, Freddy says apologetically. Oh. So what happened? Guillermo starts. He has no idea what to say. Nandor's beautiful face flashes before his eyes. I don't want to talk about it with you. Freddy swallows. Right. I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry, Freddy says, eyes shiny again. I shouldn't have... It's just that I was very worried about you. Our paths might be diverging, but I'll always care about you. I care about you too, Guillermo says, chest aching. Freddy gives him a painful smile. You always come into work, you know. Everyone knew something must have happened when you didn't come into work. And I thought maybe you'd... He trails off meaningfully. What? Freddy coughs. Taken things badly enough that you'd... Oh, Guillermo says blankly. No, definitely not. Definitely not. He's a little offended, honestly. In the last day and a half, he's gone to pretty extraordinary lengths to stay alive. He's killed to stay alive, fucking literally. And Freddy thinks he couldn't survive a day without him? It's not like he has a history, it's just... Wow. Freddy thinks Guillermo couldn't survive a day without him. Freddy's flushing the way he does when he's really embarrassed. Oh, he says. I am so glad to hear that, Guillermo. Guillermo says, blinking to clear his eyes. I think you should go home. Freddy inhales. Right, he says. Yeah. I thought you'd need me, Freddy says, scrubbing a hand over the back of his neck, a gesture so well loved that Guillermo has it memorized. He does hope Freddy will be happy. He wants Freddy to be happy. Thank you, Guillermo tells him, a little stunned at his own certainty. But I don't. Recovery is faster than he's afraid it's going to be. He tells the police someone attacked him in the park, and then tells them about being chained up somewhere dark. He doesn't tell them anything else, but apparently that's enough. They tell him they think it might have been the Staten Island vampire, the serial killer Guillermo has listened to at least 3 different podcast episodes about. The irony almost kills him, but he manages to keep a straight face. He's under strict orders to contact a detective if he remembers anything else. Carla and the coffeehouse crew welcome him back with open arms. Lots of well-meaning questions and a mountain of sympathy for the gaping hole Freddy leaves in his life. Celeste comes over after work a lot. Carla puts his trickiest specials up on the board so it's easier for him to fall asleep at night. His hand heals, faster than it apparently should, according to his doctor. He doesn't see Nandor again, or Colin Robinson, or the culty lady, although he keeps a sharp eye out whenever he's walking alone at night. He sneaks garlic into his mom's purse and the pockets of Carla's jackets and gives Celeste a thrift store crucifix that she immediately turns into a vaguely emo necklace. He buys a pack of garden stakes from the CVS to carry around in his messenger bag, and while he's there, he goes to look at the Yankee candles. No one else is in the candle aisle. He unscrews the top off a cinnamon candle and gives it a huff. He should be rationalizing it all by now. Should be convinced it was a hallucination brought on by dehydration or trauma or whatever. Maybe he really was kept hostage by a serial killer and the vampire stuff is just his mind protecting itself. But for whatever reason, it doesn't happen. He can't make himself buy the idea that Nandor isn't real. He experiments with the dessert so weird Carla won't let him put it on the specials board. Sanguinaccio Dolce, an Italian pig's blood bitter chocolate mousse thing he only knows about because of an episode of Hannibal, dusted with cinnamon on top. It tastes like chocolate mousse, only richer. He makes a regular bitter chocolate mousse and puts it in a cannoli shell, with pistachio cinnamon dust on the ends, and calls it Relentless Chocolate Death. Weeks go by, and it sells modestly well. He kind of thinks that's going to be it. He touched something extraordinary, by some miracle survived it, and now he's never going to see it again. "Memo," Celeste says, popping her head into the bakery at almost 6 p.m., near the end of the double shift he pulled because Polly got the flu. It's November, so it's already dark out. "There's somebody out front asking for you? Like, literally out front. They won't come through the door." Guillermo's heart kicks at his ribs, and then he remembers the culty lady and the vampiric council and the body he left on the floor of the mansion, and it sinks back down into the pit of his stomach. "Who is it?" he asks. Celeste rolls her eyes. "If I knew, I'd say their name, dummy. Who's your absolute freakiest friend? Because I thought it was me, but now I'm second-guessing it." It's a dumb idea, but he's had dumber. "Tell them I'm almost done," Guillermo says, sliding another tray of cannoli shells into the oven. "I can meet them in the alley in 10. 10 minutes later, armed with a pocket full of garlic and a steak in one hand, Guillermo steps cautiously through the back door into the alley behind Carla's. There's someone standing behind the dumpster, a tall, dark silhouette. Guillermo steps in a puddle, and the silhouette takes a step towards him into the light. "Oh," Guillermo says, because Nandor is even more beautiful than he remembers. "Seriously, it's unfair. His hair is so rich and gleaming, his eyes so dark and captivating, his bone structure so stunning, Guillermo kind of wants to cry about it." "I fucked that man," he thinks, shocked by it all over again. "That man isn't even a man. He's a vampire like Lestat, and he sucked my dick 3 separate times."
"Guillermo," Nandor says, and takes 3 steps quickly towards him, but then stops. "You are well?"
"Yeah," Guillermo says. "Are you?"
"Yes," Nandor says. "I am very glad we did not both die horrible deaths."
"Same," Guillermo says. His chest is starting to feel very warm again. He crosses his arms to have something to do with his hands and accidentally drops the steak on the ground where it lands with a clatter. Right, he was doing something with his hands. He and Nandor both stare at it for a second.
"So," Nandor says, drawing out the vowel. "What's new with you?"
"Not much," Guillermo replies. Except I guess I'm a vampire slayer now. Not that I'd slay you, but, my family are all, like, off-limits, I guess, to you."
"That's fair," Nandor says quickly.
There's an awkward pause.
Guillermo says, "not that I'm not happy to see that you're okay, but did you want something?"
Nandor gives him a desperate look, like he wants Guillermo to rescue him from his own question.
"Yes," he says grudgingly. "I wanted to ask you something."
"Oh," Guillermo says. He tries to discreetly dump the garlic bulbs out of his pockets. What?
"I wanted to know," Nandor says, eyes on the garlic bulbs, "if you wanted to become a vampire."
Guillermo's heart does something complicated in his chest, like some kind of heart gymnastics move.
"A vampire?"
"Yes," Nandor says with an uncomfortable smile. "Like I said a couple of times that night, I think you would be an amazing familiar. And after a couple of months or maybe years, I would be happy to give you the gift of eternal life. If that was a thing you wanted to have."
"Do it," Guillermo's inner 15-year-old screams at him. "Say yes, you idiot. Say yes right the hell now before he changes his mind."
He says. Nandor looks hopeful. "The most beautiful man on Earth doesn't need to breathe," his inner 15-year-old reminds him, desperate and a little bit creepy. "He gave you 3 blowjobs, and he didn't need to breathe once the whole time." Guillermo takes a deep, shaky breath.
"Not right now?"
"Not
Nandor repeats, like he's having trouble with the concept.
Right now.
Not right now, Guillermo confirms. He makes himself smile, although it feels forced.
I'm a baker, not a whatever a familiar does. I'm single. I've got some family history stuff that I'm exploring, obviously. I'm not sure it's the right moment to totally upend my life. Or, you know, I don't think I want to end my life at this juncture. So, not right now?
Oh, Nandor says. He sounds lost. I see.
Guillermo says. Was that all?
Kind of,
Nandor says. He shifts his weight from one leg to the other.
I thought maybe you would say yes.
I did some experimenting, Guillermo blurts out. With, pig's blood. Have you ever tried sanguinaccio?
Nandor shakes his head.
Okay, so, it's an Italian custard made with pig's blood and chocolate. Can you drink pig's blood? Or is it human only? Anyway, it's still technically a liquid. You could drink it if you didn't thicken it completely. It's traditionally served in an orange, which I think is kind of fun, or at least that's how they served it on Hannibal. Have you seen Hannibal? It's kind of trashy, but, I liked it.
Guillermo's face is hot as a furnace. Nandor is staring at him.
I have never tried singing nachos.
Sanguinaccio.
Sanguinaccio. That's what I said.
Guillermo takes a deep breath.
Do you want to try it?
Nandor looks startled, and then slowly he smiles. His teeth are too big for his human mouth. It's a very dorky smile. Guillermo's heart does a hopeful little flip.
Yes, he says. I would very much like to try it.
Guillermo beams at him.
That's great. When are you free?
Tomorrow evening, after dark, of course.
Of course.
Guillermo can't stop smiling.
I'll text you my address. Wait, do you have a phone?
Of course I have a phone, Nandor says with dignity. I am a very modern man with modern sensibilities.
Do you have it with you? I'll put my number into it.
Obviously I don't have it with me, Guillermo. It is connected to the wall with wires. Topher has shown them to me before.
Guillermo doesn't laugh, but it's a close thing.
It might be easier to just meet here, then. It's close by, if you're okay with a walk.
Yes,
Nandor says. He's drawn imperceptibly closer somehow, without Guillermo's human senses noticing.
At this same time?
Sure, Guillermo says, nodding. Now is good.
Good,
Nandor repeats. He's staring at Guillermo's mouth. He's close enough to touch.
Now is good?
Now is great, Guillermo says, kind of losing the thread of the conversation.
Great,
Nandor says, flashing that dorky smile again, and then they're kissing. Kissing Nandor this time feels like finding water in the desert, like drinking a cold hospital Gatorade after being chained up to a wall and dehydrated for over 24 hours. Like relief. They make out for a while, and then the alarm on Guillermo's phone goes off, and he has to go back in and finish his shift.
Don't go, Nandor says, kissing him again.
I have to, Guillermo protests, giggling into Nandor's mouth.
You don't have to,
Nandor argues, a familiar pout on his face.
You are not a prisoner anymore. You can choose to stay out here and kiss me if you really want to.
I want to,
Guillermo says softly, and presses another closed-mouthed kiss to Nandor's mouth. The beard tickles his lips.
Tomorrow night, okay?
He reluctantly pulls himself away, and Nandor looks at him like, well, like he's food, and Nandor has gone a long time without.
Promise?
Nandor asks, the lamplight and shadows falling lovingly on his face as Guillermo retreats to the kitchen door.
I promise, Guillermo says.
With a serious effort, he steps back inside and closes the door. He puts his apron back on, washes his hands, and goes back to the kitchen. His face hurts from smiling. night before closing, he makes cinnamon roll dough, just like he does every night. It's easy, familiar. He could do it in his sleep. In the morning, the rolls will be enormous and golden, and about 50 times more fragrant than a cinnamon Yankee candle. He'll eat one for breakfast, and it will be hot and steaming and burn his fingers a little. And he'll put one in a white bakery bag to bring to his mom when he meets her for lunch. The cinnamon rolls will be commonplace and delicious, a good thing to put in your belly, a sweet thing to fuel an ordinary life. Guillermo touches his tender mouth with two fingers and finds himself laughing, warm puffs of air against his fingertips. This hand that killed a monster also bakes bread. This body that hungers for a monster's touch also hungers for conchas and pozole and relentless chocolate death. His monster likes kisses in the Great British Bake Off. "Surprising," he murmurs to himself.
"What's surprising?"
Celeste asks, popping back in from the front, looking harassed.
"Life,"
Guillermo says, and then laughs a little, breathless.
"I guess." "Fine, don't tell me."
Guillermo smiles. The end. Author's notes. Nandor immediately pukes up the sanguinaccio, but the experimental cocktail Guillermo makes him, with heated pig's blood, habanero oil, and a cinnamon stick garnish, is viewed with extreme suspicion at first, and eagerly and absolutely blows Nandor's mind when he tries it. There are tears. Reader's notes. Okay, so this was such an interesting timing of two loves of mine coming together at once. Like, Sunshine by Robin McKinley is an extremely foundational piece of work in my life, I guess. That sounds weird, but that's what made me love vampires. It's interesting, too, because I read that about the same time I read Twilight when it first came out, because I needed to know about it to recommend it to people for my job, and it was very different. Anyway, Sunshine is so, so, so amazing. And then I've lately just been totally obsessed with What We Do in the Shadows, and particularly Guillermo and Nandor, but like mostly Guillermo. And it's really amazing to me that the author of this piece managed to combine the very Robin McKinley-esque narration style of Sunshine, which was humor. It had humor, but it wasn't like it didn't have the same comedic tone as What We Do in the Shadows. That wasn't its main emphasis. And I would not have said that you could take that narrative style and mix it with What We Do in the Shadows in any way at all. And this story completely proved me wrong, and I'm absolutely fucking thrilled about it. So to take that rambling three-page parentheses. Oh God, Robin McKinley, why did you do that to us? Anyway, that whole narration style and turning it into a comedic tone that fits in with What We Do in the Shadows and really gets both Guillermo and Nandor's voices just spot on is so amazing. And I really, really loved it and immediately knew I had to try to record it, even though I am still very worried about my Nandor voice. So hopefully that worked out okay. Anyway, I hope you really enjoy this story too. And thank you very much to the author for the permission to record it. And thank you for writing it, because it's amazing. The end.